Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, for weeks and weeks and weeks, we've been waiting for answers from the Obama administration. And we would have loved a clarifying appearance from U.N. Ambassador Susan Rice about her very curious comments the Sunday after the terrorist attack on the Benghazi consulate, where she insisted this was all spontaneous, all the result of the internet video. No, not terrorism. Now, of course, we know it was terrorism. They knew it was terrorism even before she appeared on TV, but they ran out the clock pretty effectively on this before the election. She made no appearances. Nobody really had anything clarifying to say in the 8 weeks between the attack and Election Day. But now, of course, it looks like the president wants to make Susan Rice the next Secretary of State. And folks like John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Kelly Ayotte have said, well, unless this gets cleared up, this is going to be a big problem for us. Now, Susan Rice is more than willing to meet with these folks up on Capitol Hill, which is kind of nauseating the fact that we didn't get better answers before the election, Jim. But at least it shows that the administration recognizes this is an issue, or they would have just kept ignoring these Republican senators, and they know that a Susan Rice confirmation is not a slam dunk at this point.
Lindsey Graham has just come out of a meeting with Susan Rice, and his quote is just coming over the wires is, "We are not even close to getting answers to basic questions on Benghazi," which is not how that meeting went, and is the concerns I have are greater than before on Susan Rice and Benghazi. So I think we can safely say that that meeting did not go as well as Susan Rice hoped. The reason I was nominating this for the good martini is that Obama's got 55 votes in the Senate right now, or in the upcoming Senate, which will be seated in January. So the fact that she goes up there kind of indicates to me that she recognized they have some sort of problem there, that they can't just bulldoze their way through it. We've seen enormous effort being thrown at the argument that opposing Susan Rice is racist and sexist. The Washington Post had an appalling in-house editorial on this, basically kind of said, yeah, it is all racism that's opposition to this. Benghazi is almost not even mentioned as this major issue. She felt either that she had a great ability in her ability to charm Lindsey Graham, as we all know, the very toughest Republican on Capitol Hill, the guy who voted for Sotomayor and Elena Kagan and all that stuff. If you can't win over Lindsey Graham, chances are you're not going to win over all the other Republicans. You got to wonder if there's some nervousness in the Senate Democrat caucus, if some of them are not really all that eager to go for her. Susan Rice has made plenty of enemies in Washington. She's made really vicious anonymous quotes dropped to Dana Milbank in the Washington Post and Maureen Dowd in the New York Times. So she's made enemies and not just on the right. The fact that she felt the need to go up there is certainly suggests some vulnerability over there, which is good news for us. And it's very interesting that her effort to be all warm and fuzzy with Lindsey Graham did not work in the slightest, and somehow has apparently may have stiffened the spine of Graham on her nomination.
On to martini number two now, Jim, and we sort of stay in the Senate. As longtime West Virginia Congresswoman Shelley Moore Capito, I think she got first elected around the year 2000. She will be challenging Senator Jay Rockefeller, if in fact he decides to run for re-election in 2014. One of the first people out to criticize Capito, the Club for Growth, which of course is focused on electing pro-growth candidates, less spending, low-tax candidates to Congress. Their take on Capito is this. Congresswoman Capito has a long record of support of bailouts, pork, and bigger government. She voted to bail out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac for massive expansions of government-run health insurance, giveaways to big labor, and repeatedly voted to continue funding for wasteful earmarks like an exploratorium in San Francisco and an aquarium in South Carolina. That's not the formula for GOP success in U.S. Senate races. You talked about this at length in The Jolt. You and I have slightly different takes on this. You're miffed at the Club for Growth for deciding to open shots this early in a campaign where Capito could very well be the strongest candidate for the GOP.
Couple of points here. I mean, look, as you noted, this is extremely early for the 2014 Senate elections. We don't know if Capito is going to be the only Republican running. Maybe there'll be two. Maybe there'll be a whole bunch. Maybe the West Virginia equivalent of Marco Rubio is out there, and we're going to have some great young rising star who will forcefully articulate the conservative message. Having said that, let's keep in mind that we may not get somebody better. The Club for Growth is pretty clear on what their agenda is. It is free market capitalism. And if you ask them specifically what is their legislative agenda, I laid this out in the Morning Jolt, it's all variety of tax cuts, usually on corporate taxes, investment, dividends and various other categories, a bunch of proposals that I'm going to argue are going to be fairly meaningless to the average West Virginia voter. As we all know, West Virginia is not a wealthy state. It is an older state. It is a rural and poorer state that is, you know, the largest employer in the state, private employer in the state is Walmart. If you're going to run a Republican who's going to win statewide in a state where we have not had much success, the Republicans have not had success running statewide in West Virginia, maybe you don't run a down-the-line free market conservative Republican. Maybe you run, you sprinkle some populism in there, and maybe you end up with a Republican senator who isn't going to be terrific on capital gains taxes and dividend taxes and corporate taxes, but who's really, really good on EPA's war on coal. Seeing the Club for Growth wanting to make earmarks one of the issues that they find Capito unacceptable in the state that, you know, reelected Robert Byrd like 400 times strikes me as a really tough sell. I'm open to persuasion, but I'm just not totally convinced that down the line, free market economics are going to be a message that'll be very easy to sell in a state like West Virginia.
Certainly possible. The Capito would be the strongest candidate. And compared to Jay Rockefeller, I think that's an easy choice, and hopefully it would be an easy choice for most West Virginians. And we talked about yesterday how you have to prioritize your issues and how Susan Estrich is all upset now that Obama wants to raise taxes. For the Club for Growth, it's free market capitalism, like you mentioned. So they're going to be focusing on that issue primarily in a campaign. It's in another state where the most likely electable candidate might be pro-choice. You're not going to get an endorsement from the National Right to Life Committee. And if there is a pro-life candidate in the race, that's who they'll probably get behind. The other issue I think that's playing out potentially in favor of the Club for Growth right now is, number one, their past president is now a senator from a state where a lot of folks would say, oh, we had to go with Arlen Specter. He gives our better chance to win. He's the incumbent in 2004, which I know you roundly opposed. And we found out 6 years later, well, look, Pat Toomey can win in a state like Pennsylvania. And finally, as this fiscal cliff discussion moves along and we see folks like John Boehner giving ground like crazy and Barack Obama giving zero ground. So we get to the point where the Republicans, the only card they're holding is marginal rates and they have nowhere left to compromise, it seems. I think people would like to see the Republicans out there and conservatives pushing really hard for our ideal thing, not how much we're willing to give up, but how much we want to see these free market principles in place to really cut spending, to really reform entitlements. I don't think a lot of people are very satisfied with what they're seeing from the Republican leadership. They didn't like what they saw much in the debt ceiling negotiations or some of these other things that have happened over the past couple of years. So while it's possible that this could end up throwing a monkey wrench in the West Virginia race, a lot of conservatives are out there saying it's time to fight for principles even beyond electability at this point.
You have persuaded me, and part of that is that the answer to every question is always Pat Toomey, one of my all-time favorite lawmakers. And you do make a valid point that you could make an argument that culturally, certainly central Pennsylvania, is not terribly different from West Virginia. Obviously, heavily coal, heavily rural. These are the folks who Obama derided as clinging to their guns and religion, and they ended up voting for, as you mentioned, the former president of the Club for Growth. Having said that, Pat Toomey is a really phenomenal, communicator and probably gets this stuff and is able to explain this stuff about as well as anybody on Capitol Hill in layman's terms and in a way that everybody kind of can appreciate and understand. So as long as we have that option in West Virginia, I'll take that over Capito. But let's not fool ourselves that if that option isn't out there, I mean, we've seen, former CEOs and a coal company executive, and a whole bunch of seemingly promising candidates, go take a swing at statewide office in West Virginia and fall flat. We need a little bit of flexibility to get the most conservative, still electable figure to be the party's nominee time and again in states like this.
If it does turn into a Capito Rockefeller race, I don't think we're going to see Jay Rockefeller with a 12-gauge blowing away the cap and trade act. So that could bode well for Shelley Capito too.
It's true. This is not a Joe Manchin type Democrat. This is a guy who, look immensely wealthy and has pretty much been there every time that the Harry Reid has needed him.
As you mentioned, Harry Reid, he is back in the headlines talking about this self-righteous push to change the filibuster rules. You may remember back when Republicans in the Senate, when they had the majority a few years ago, were trying to change filibuster rules just for judicial nominees, and Harry Reid, Joe Biden, and all these other Democrats thought it was the end of civilization itself. Now, because the Republicans have a tendency to block horrific legislation, especially when Harry Reid offers no chance for amendments or extensive floor debate, that they are filibustering as much as humanly possible. Well, that is That is gumming up the works of government. That is not righteous minority opposition. So now, because it could affect Harry Reid and President Obama's agenda, well, talking about making a huge push to change those filibuster rules hasn't gotten real specific, but Mitch McConnell and others have certainly hit the floor talking about how it's an affront to the process in the United States Congress and should be an affront to all Americans.
We on the right have argued about media bias for a really long time, but I think one of the things we can point to in this case, this is a case in which media bias really harms the country, because you can tell it from both the on-the-record comments and the off-the-record comments. President Obama seems to believe that if we go over the fiscal cliff, he benefits because the public will blame Republicans. And some of the polling bears this out. Certainly, Patty Murray and other Senate Democrats seem to believe that's the case, and they have said that they'd be perfectly happy to go over the cliff as the public blames Republicans for the mess. You'd think they'd be worried about, hey, how do we resolve the fiscal cliff? Now we're dealing with the filibuster instead, which is this kind of strange side issue, it seems to me, designed to run the clock out. You look at this idea of, well, the public will blame Republicans. Greg, could you imagine what it would be like if the Republican brand were hurt by this? And it'd be in the toilet, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's totally different from right now. No, it wouldn't be totally different. You can't go into a crisis trying to position yourself for 2014 when the crisis hits on January 1st, 2013. And oh, by the way, of the 230-some House Republicans that are still around, they just managed to survive the onslaught of a year in which Barack Obama got 64 million votes. In other words, if you haven't knocked off a House Republican this past November, chances are you're not going to knock them off unless they come up with, some sort of terrible scandal or something like that. I don't want to say the House majority is totally impregnable, but at this point, Obama saying, I've won and I'm going to hold rally. No, all of the people who are in this situation have been reelected. The House Republicans are supposed to compromise on their principles. Or what? They won't get reelected? At least the public will demonize them, and the media will demonize them. They're already getting demonized. The absolute worst has already fallen on the heads of House Republicans, and they've survived. As a result of that, they don't have any incentive to go closer to the Democrats' position. When you look at this, and then you begin to realize, oh wow, we really are going to end up going over the fiscal cliff, because everybody's totally convinced they win. If we go over the cliff. And the answer is that you're right. I don't think House Republicans will find themselves drastically hurt by the disaster of the fiscal cliff. I think Obama and the Senate Democrats are underestimating the cost to them, but certainly they're not convinced of it. The only people who really will run into trouble are the American public, Greg. And, hey, why would anybody think of people like us, right?
And we're just the ones always left holding the bag. What else is new? So Nevada, well done.
Way to go, Nevada. Way to go. Jim, we're going to be saying that for another 4 years at least. So
sadly, that's the case. Well, hopefully he'll be the minority leader after 2014, but that's a long way to go to make that happen. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today, and please join us again on Wednesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.